Right now, millions of people in South Africa are facing, well, completely unsafe drinking water and failing supply systems. But there's this really counterintuitive twist to it all. This massive, crippling water crisis, it actually has absolutely nothing to do with a lack of water.
Yeah, it's a really striking paradox. I mean, especially when you start looking at the actual hydrological data versus what is literally coming out of the taps.
Right. And unpacking that paradox is our mission for today's deep dive. We're looking at this recent Industry Insights document, and it's published by a water management and infrastructure company called Resolve.
And we aren't just exploring this to understand South Africa's specific geographic situation, right?
Yeah.
We're really digging into this because the document functions as, well, basically a masterclass in systems thinking.
Exactly. It strips down infrastructure management to its core. It shows us how to decode and ultimately solve these seemingly impossible municipal failures.
What's fascinating here is this stark contrast between this water crisis and, another highly publicized issue South Africa faces, which is its energy crisis.
Oh, right, the rolling blackouts.
Yeah, exactly. They frequently get lumped together in the public consciousness as just this general infrastructure collapse, but the underlying mechanics are fundamentally different.
Because with the power grid, it's a supply issue, right?
Right. When the power grid fails, it is overwhelmingly a problem of generation capacity. The power plants physically cannot combust enough coal or capture enough renewables to meet that massive demand. But when we look at the water sector, the rainfall across the major catchment areas is actually adequate.
Wow, really? So it's not a drought issue at all.
Not at all. The country has already built these incredibly sophisticated, large-scale water storage and transfer infrastructures. The dams are holding water.
Okay.
The gap isn't a lack of supply. It is an absolute breakdown in governance, delivery, and routine maintenance.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because visualizing a water crisis where there is plenty of water, it kind of takes a minute to wrap your head around.
It does, yeah.
It's sort of like having this massive, fully stocked reservoir of premium coffee, but your coffee maker is completely broken.
I love that analogy.
Right, like the pipes are leaking all over the kitchen counter, and nobody in the house actually knows how to fix the machine. So the coffee exists, but it's just not making it to your cup safely.
That captures the friction perfectly, honestly. The resource itself is secured, but the delivery mechanism has just totally fractured.
Yeah.
And the Resolve document categorizes this fracture into three distinct, interconnected pillars of failure.
Okay, so if the water is sitting securely in the dams, the immediate question becomes, well, what happens the second it leaves that dam? Where is the chain breaking first?
Well, the chain breaks almost immediately at the human level. The first pillar of failure is this severe management and skills deficit within the local municipalities.
Meaning they just don't have the people to run it.
Right. Because when we talk about municipal water, we are talking about highly complex, pressurized, chemical, biological systems. You need deep technical expertise to run them safely.
And I'm guessing that expertise is what's missing.
Exactly. The local authorities have suffered a massive brain drain. They are operating without crucial technical staff specifically. There's a severe lack of engineers, project managers, and these people known as process controllers.
Okay, let's define that role for a second. What does a process controller actually do, and why does an entire system fail if they aren't in the building?
So a process controller is the person on the ground actively managing the physics and the chemistry of the water. They're the ones, titrating the exact amount of chlorine to kill bacteria without making the water toxic.
Ah, okay. So it's a highly precise job.
Extremely precise. They monitor flow rates, they manage the biological reactors in wastewater plants, they adjust the massive pumps that keep the network pressurized. And when you lose these professionals to the private sector, which happens a lot.
Because the municipal work environment is probably pretty rough, right?
Yeah, it's degraded into this constant, stressful firefighting mode.
Yeah.
And when they leave, those essential daily functions just vanish. Chemical monitoring slips. Pumps are run until they literally burn out instead of being serviced.
So it stops being proactive and just becomes entirely reactive.
Exactly. The system shifts from proactive engineering to pure panicked reaction.
Okay, so the human capital evaporates and basic maintenance slips. But even with a skeleton crew, water should theoretically still flow through a pipe.
You would think so, yeah.
Right. So why is the physical delivery actually stopping? Well, it turns out the physical drought is actually being caused by a digital one.
Right.
Specifically, a total collapse in municipal IT and billing, which is the second pillar. And I'll admit, on my first read of the document, I was genuinely hung up on this.
In what way? Like, it didn't make sense.
Well, I understand how a physically burst main stops water from reaching my neighborhood. I get how a burnt-out pump causes a physical shortage. But how does an IT glitch or, you know, a broken billing system cause a literal tap to run dry?
It's a great question. If we look past the immediate surface level, the second-order effects of a broken IT system reveal this terrifying death spiral.
A death spiral?
Yeah, because a municipal water network isn't just pipes, right? It's a massive financial ecosystem. When a town's billing system is outdated or corrupted, they just stop generating accurate bills.
And, well, a financially literate audience knows that without bills, you have no revenue. But I imagine the consequences go much deeper than just missing a few monthly budget targets.
Oh, far deeper. When that revenue collection plummets, the municipality's debt profile explodes. Because they still owe money to the national water boards that supply the raw water in the first place.
Oh, of course. They're still buying the water.
Exactly. And they owe the power utility for the electricity used to run all those massive pumps. So as their credit rating tanks, they get completely locked out of the financial markets.
Meaning they can't borrow money to fix things.
Right. They can't issue municipal bonds. Mm. They can't secure commercial loans for capital expenditure. Suddenly, they don't have the capital to buy, like, a simple replacement valve, let alone overhaul an entire treatment plant. So the digital failure financially starves the physical infrastructure.
Wow. Which also, I'd imagine, creates a massive data blind spot. Because if your digital systems are down, you aren't just losing money, you are losing visibility on the entire network.
That's exactly it. Managing a pressurized water grid without IT data is like trying to balance a city's traffic grid with all the traffic lights turned off and no cameras.
Just total chaos.
Yeah, you literally don't know where the bottlenecks are until a massive crash happens. Or, you know, in this case, until a high-pressure pipe physically blows wide open under a city street.
Yeah.
You were just guessing at pressure levels and flow rates.
And that structural blindness is what drives us right into the third pillar, which is infrastructure neglect. Because you have no capital from the broken billing,
yeah,
and you have no engineers to interpret the data even if you had it.
Right.
So the physical reality of the network simply rots. The source document notes that much of South Africa's water network has blown right past its intended lifespan.
And the physical physics of a neglected water network are just punishing. I mean, water is incredibly heavy, and it is highly corrosive over time.
And the result of that punishing physics is a statistic from the Resolve document that I just found absolutely staggering. We know older pipes develop leaks, right?
Sure.
But industry estimates suggest that over 40% of treated water never reaches consumers.
Let that sit for a moment. 4 out of every 10 drops.
It is an incredible scale of loss. Think about it. The municipality spends enormous amounts of electricity to pump the water and massive amounts of money on chemicals to treat it to drinking standards. And 40% of it just vanishes into the soil through unseen bursts and unaccounted leaks.
It's tragic, honestly. The document classifies this as non-revenue water and notes it is wildly above global best practice benchmarks.
And we have to examine the back end of that cycle too, right? Because the physical breakdown isn't just about clean water escaping. It's about what happens to the water after a city uses it.
Right, the wastewater. The wastewater treatment plants are suffering the exact same maintenance backlog. And when a wastewater pump fails, raw sewage basically bypasses the plant entirely and flows directly into the rivers and dams.
Which then pollutes the very source water the town relies on for tomorrow's drinking water.
Exactly. It creates this brutal feedback loop. The downstream water treatment plant now has to pull in highly contaminated river water. And to clean that heavily polluted water, they have to use double or triple the amount of expensive purifying chemicals.
Which drains their already non-existent budget even faster.
You got it. Every single point of infrastructure failure just exacerbates the scarcity across the board.
It paints an incredibly bleak picture when you line up those three pillars. But, you know, there is a distinct narrative shift in the source material. Once you accept that this is fundamentally a management and systems issue and not a meteorological drought, you realize it's actually entirely solvable.
Yes, that's the hopeful part.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't trying to magically engineer a rainstorm here. Yeah. We literally just need to fix the bucket holding the water.
Right. So where do they even start?
Well, the experts point out that the most highly effective interventions are almost never the ones that, you know, make the evening news. To stabilize a failing municipal system, you don't need shiny new mega dams or multi-billion dollar decade-long infrastructure overhauls right out of the gate.
So no ribbon-cutting ceremonies for giant projects.
Exactly. The highest, most immediate impact comes from optimizing the current network.
The low-hanging fruit. Rezol focuses really heavily on basic maintenance. We're talking rigorous leak detection programs and intelligent pressure management across the grid, which feels like a classic human trap. It's like a guy who wants to buy a brand new high-performance engine for his car because it's running rough, but all he really needed to do was change the oil and patch a small leak in a hose. Why is basic maintenance so incredibly hard for these municipalities to prioritize?
Well, there's a political economy to infrastructure, right? Routine maintenance is largely invisible. Politicians rarely get to host a press conference and cut a ribbon in front of a newly patched underground pipe or like a recalibrated pressure valve.
Right. It doesn't win votes.
Exactly. But beyond the politics, it loops right back to our first pillar, which is the lack of human capacity.
Yeah.
Let's take pressure management as an example.
Okay. Yeah. Walk us through how that actually works in practice.
So in a water grid, consumer demand drops massively at around 2 a.m. Everyone is asleep. But if the massive municipal pumps are still pushing water at daytime pressure, that excess pressure has nowhere to go.
Because nobody's opening their taps to release it.
Right. So it finds the weakest points in the old decaying pipes and blows them out, causing massive leaks. Now, a relatively cheap intervention is installing smart pressure, producing valves, or PRVs, that automatically lower the grid's pressure at night.
Oh, that makes total sense.
And that alone saves millions of liters. But you can't just drop a smart valve into a trench and call it a day. You need a skilled technician to calibrate it, monitor the telemetry data, and adjust it seasonally.
So it's not just about procuring the hardware, it's about capacity building. You have to accelerate training and provide actual operational mentorship to the local staff.
Precisely. You cannot just hand a struggling municipality a piece of technology and walk away. The intervention has to include human upskilling.
Okay, but wait. If the public still owns the water, a private company isn't going to just step in, fix municipal pipes, install smart valves, and train local staff out of the goodness of their hearts.
No, of course not. They need a return on investment.
Right. But if the municipality is completely broke and they're locked out of the bond market because of their broken billing that we talked about, there is literally no money to pay the private company. That feels like an unsolvable math problem. How do you fund a turnaround when the bank account is at absolute zero?
And this is the crux of the Rezol document. This is where they introduce a proven structural financial solution, public-private partnerships, or PPPs. Because the government's fiscal capacity is tapped out, bringing in private sector capital and private sector execution is literally the only mathematical way to bridge the gap.
Okay, let's pause on that, because the phrase public-private partnership in the context of water usually triggers immediate alarm bells for citizens.
Oh, absolutely.
The assumption is always water privatization. People immediately picture this massive multinational corporation buying the town's reservoir and jacking up the price of a basic human right by 500%. So what is Rezol actually proposing here?
It's a vital distinction to make, and the source material is explicitly clear on this. This is not privatization. No asset is being sold.
Okay, that's crucial.
Yeah. The public retains 100% ownership of the water, the reservoirs, and the pipes. The local municipality remains the statutory water service authority. A public-private partnership in this specific context is simply a contractual mechanism.
A mechanism to do what, exactly?
To leverage private sector strengths, specifically their access to upfront capital, their speed of procurement, and their specialized engineering talent in order to rehabilitate a public asset. It is a service contract. It's not a corporate buyout.
So if they aren't buying the water to sell it back to citizens, how does the business model actually function? Where's the profit?
It functions through this incredibly elegant financial mechanism called the shared savings approach. And it completely rewires the incentive structure. Here is how it plays out in reality. The private partner, like Rezol, comes into a failing municipality and conducts a baseline audit.
They figure out exactly how bad things are.
Right. They measure exactly how much water is being lost and how much revenue is uncollected. Then the private company fronts all the cash for the interventions.
Wow. So they use their own capital to buy the smart meters, hire the leak repair crews, and upgrade the IT systems. The municipality puts up zero upfront capital.
Zero. The private company absorbs the entire initial financial burden. They do the work, they fix the leaks, and they optimize the billing. Now, remember that 40% of water that was being lost.
The non-revenue water.
Right. If the private company successfully repairs the network and drops that loss from 40% down to, say, 15%, the municipality suddenly experiences a massive drop in their operating costs.
Oh, because they're no longer paying the electricity to pump water into the dirt.
Exactly. They're no longer buying chemicals to treat water that just vanishes. Furthermore, with the new IT system, their revenue collection spikes because people are finally getting accurate bills.
And the private company is paid directly out of that newly created financial surplus.
You got it. Over the life of the contract, say, a 10-year term, the private company takes a predetermined percentage of those actual measured savings and that newly recovered revenue.
That's brilliant. It's an entirely performance-based loop. It shifts the risk totally onto the private sector. If the engineering company comes in, spends millions on new valves, but fails to actually reduce the leaks or fix the billing, they don't get paid. They eat the loss.
Exactly. The financial risk is transferred to the exact party best equipped to manage it, which is the technical experts. The private partner is highly motivated to deploy the absolute best technology and work as efficiently as possible because their return on investment depends entirely on tangible, measurable performance improvements.
That makes total sense.
And meanwhile, the municipality gets a rehabilitated infrastructure network, drastically improved water delivery for its citizens, and a balanced ledger. And they get all of that without having to take on any new debt.
The alignment of risk and reward there is just brilliant, and I think it contextualizes why Resolve published this document in the first place. They aren't just academic observers here. This is their operational domain. The document outlines their two decades of experience navigating these specific municipal bottlenecks.
Yeah, and rather than just offering rigid corporate packages, they specialize in what they call modular services.
Which is a critical capability. It means they don't force a cash-strapped town into a massive overarching contract if they don't actually need it. They can handle the entire life cycle of a water plant. Or they can step in for a very surgical fix.
Right. If a town just needs a software upgrade to plug a specific billing data leak, or they just need a crew to install pressure valves in one neighborhood, they can isolate that problem and deploy.
So bringing this all together, you're listening to this and maybe you don't work anywhere near municipal water management. Why does parsing through South African infrastructure policy matter to your daily life?
It's a fair question.
Well, because this deep dive fundamentally illustrates how to evaluate a failing system. Whether you are running a business, managing a supply chain, or just trying to optimize your own personal schedule, the mechanics are the same. Before you immediately seek out more resources, before you demand a bigger budget, hire more staff, or try to squeeze 4 more hours out of your day, you must rigorously audit your existing systems.
Right. You have to ensure you aren't currently leaking the resources you already possess.
Exactly. Because as this crisis shows us, 40% of your current effort could be vanishing into the ground simply because the fundamental delivery mechanisms are fractured.
That is the ultimate utility of systems thinking. It forces you to look past the visible scarcity to find the invisible inefficiencies. And I think, you know, consider your own industry, your own organization, or even your own household. If a physical vital resource like water can deplete by 40% simply because an organization lacks the sensors to measure it or the administrative discipline to account for it.
What are the invisible, unmeasured leaks slowly draining the infrastructure of our own daily lives?
Exactly. It really makes you wonder.
That is a question worth carrying with you today. Look for the leaks before you look for the rain. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into systems, infrastructure, and solving the impossible. We will catch you on the next one.